Hello.
You know, my favorite thing to do is when I say that, suddenly everybody goes and looks up in anticipation, then everybody realizes it's me and not actually the speaker. Hi, everybody. I'm Drew Beecham. I'm the vice chairman of your AHA governing committee, aka the ones that you foolishly elected to power. We're going to have two beers here in the seminar today, and real quick before we get down to the actual speech, we do need some volunteers in the back. We're a little short-staffed here on the volunteers. You can see our wonderful, you know, bright fluorescent yellow shirts over here. We need about three or four volunteers to help pour the two beers today. If you're willing to help out, please see the wonderful and lovely Kate there in the back who's waving at you. We appreciate the help. And we're going to get started. I think the first beer is a Saison, right? All right. So let's get down to this. Remember, phones into the quiet, silent mode, airplane mode, or if you're not sophisticated enough to find the airplane mode on your phone, turn the damn thing off. Otherwise, keep an eye out for your schedules. Make sure you use your cups. And also, because we have two beer samples and small kegs and big room, that you need to make sure you're only taking about an ounce or two of the beer. It's too early in the morning to go bogarting the beer. All right, don't bogart the beer, man. All right, otherwise, cell phone, da-da-da-da-da. Speaker, yes. Okay, and we got beer and videos and presentation fun. And what we have here is you are in the room for Bootleg Brew Science. And we have here Jeff Mello of Bootleg Biology, LLC. I like saying the letters. Jeff Mello is the founder and chief yeast wrangler of Bootleg Biology, LLC, a.k.a. bootlegbiology.com, an open-source yeast and wild bugs project whose goal is to create the most diverse library of brewing microbes captured from bootleg sources. Bootleg Biology is the first organization to pioneer the collection of official yeast strains for geographic areas as part of its local yeast project, beginning with the original S. arlegitensis. I think I got that right, or close enough. Well, man, I speak English, not Latin. Jeff Mello and Bootleg Biology were featured in the August 2013 issue of Beer Advocate, the magazine. All right, without further ado, Bootleg Brew Science and Jeff.
All right, can you all hear me? All righty. Well, thank you all for coming out. Drew, thanks for introducing me. It's quite an honor to be up here in front of everyone. Thank you. this is my third NHC. I've been homebrewing for about 4 years, so to be speaking is a great honor. So without further ado, let's just get into it. I want to get you excited about this presentation about bootleg brew science, about yeast wrangling. So let's start it off with a little show and tell. If that doesn't win the award for most pretentious opening to a seminar, I don't know what does. So who am I? I'm Jeff Mello. As Drew said, I'm the chief yeast wrangler at Bootleg Biology, LLC. I am a homebrewer, proud yeast geek, pseudo-scientist, originally from the Seattle area, spent many years D.C., Arlington, and now live in Nashville, Tennessee. There's my contact information. Feel free to shoot me an email at any time. You have questions after the seminar, want to talk about yeast or whatnot, you can follow us on social media. So what is Bootleg Biology? Open source yeast and wild bugs project. Our goal is to create the most diverse library of microbes for fermented foods and beverages. And the way we're going to do that is something I think is very unique and gets me excited about yeast is doing it only from bootleg sources, backyards, kombucha, yogurt, honey, fruit, anything in the environment that is yeast-rich, we want it. That's what we're looking for. We're looking for something that's unique and hopefully entirely unique to brewing. We're also the first organization to focus on official yeast strains for geographic areas as part of our local yeast project, starting with the very first S. arlegitensis. And our goal is to have others contribute to this project. It's not just me out there wrangling. If we're going to get a yeast for every zip code in the country, we're going to need your help. We're going to need others to become a part of Bootleg Biology and to grow this rich yeast bank. So why be bootleg? Why do all these sketchy things with yeast and swab people's beards and fruit in your backyard? Why do that? That's kind of silly, right? No. There's some core ethos behind Bootleg Biology. First off, is we're independent. We're brewers. We're home brewers. We like to do things our way. We don't want anyone to tell us how to do it. There's not an established way of doing something awesome. If it's awesome, let's do it. We also love local, things that are fresh, that have a specific place and character. There's some uniqueness there. And things that are also made by our family and friends and people in our community, craft brewers, local farmers. And we also like being creative. You know, food should be unique. It should have a personality. It should be something that is prepared by someone who cares about what they're doing. It's not just a widget produced in a factory. We also have respect for the past. There's a cultural legacy in fermentation. It's not just something fun. It's something important that's been done by others with a lot of knowledge and respect. And we want to honor those traditions. And whether it's a family pickle recipe passed down through your grandmother, we want to continue that because there's important things that we've learned from that, and it enriches us. And we want to continue learning not just family recipes, but new techniques to understand fermentation. And that includes basic yeast wrangling techniques to help push our brewing to the next level. So the Local Yeast Project it's truly about making 100% local beer. We want yeast from every city across the globe. No matter where you are, there's yeast, and we want to find it. And those characteristics of local yeast create a local character to that beer. I'm probably preaching to the choir here, but some people don't know that. That there is yeast that will create a beer that is representative of a specific place, and that should be focused on. We have 40-plus local strains that we've collected so far from myself and others who've contributed. You can see all the states that we currently have yeast. If you don't see your state listed, raise your hand. There you go. We need your yeast. And hopefully by the end of this presentation, you'll have all the information you need to collect your own yeast and hopefully become a part of the project. And it's not just in the U.S. We have yeast from across the globe. And I was actually corresponding with someone who captured some yeast in Antarctica, and I want to find you after this presentation so we can talk. Here's just some fun, pretty photos of places we've captured local yeast. Makes it pretty exciting. And it's not just homebrewers that are experimenting with local cultures and bootleg biology yeast. You can see these brewers across the country. Perrin Brewing right here in Grand Rapids. We actually just went there last night to sample some of the cultures they have in some of their barrels they're experimenting with. And you also see a famous name there, Mr. Mike, the Mad Fermentationist, has done some experimentation with our cultures as well. Yeah. Buy his book, by the way. Okay, so hopefully everyone has had the first beer so far. So what are we drinking? This is the Saison du Backyard. It's sort of a demo beer to show off what the yeast from your backyard can produce. I think you'll find that it's a generally clean flavor. There's no funkiness. There's no sourness. I call it a Saison because I used a very simple recipe. It's not, I wouldn't say, the classical Saison character, but you can see that there's something a little bit more than just malt flavor coming through. And it was solely fermented with the S. arlingtonensis that we talked about was the first yeast strain that I isolated from my backyard. And so we'll go through the techniques that I used to capture that yeast, and so you could do something similar. So here's the meat and potatoes of the presentation, DIY yeast, how to wrangle yeast, tools of the trade, capture yeast, create auger plates, streak plates, isolate yeast. Some of it will be a little information intense, so I promise if you just hang in there, we'll really make it interesting, and I think you'll take away some good information from it. So what do you need to do some of this yeast wrangling, to be a bootleg brew scientist? Well, the items on the top row, you may not have them, but you may have an equivalent. You don't need to have a bunch of lab tools to do yeast wrangling. You just need things like a heat source. In a lab, they use a Bunsen burner, but you can use your gas range at home, blowtorch, portable butane burner. You need some kind of stretchy wrap, whether it's parafilm or saran wrap that you probably have in your kitchen, a mason jar, some kind of collection device with some cheesecloth, a pipette or a turkey baster, whatever you can use to transfer liquid. An inoculation loop, Bootleg Biology uses the bootleg inoculation loop, a paperclip. And then the row at the bottom are things you're probably not going to have in your kitchen, but are not too difficult to get a hold of, but are essential to some of these techniques. Sterile petri dishes, auger, sterile cotton swabs, test tubes. So we'll talk about how those things are going to get used. Okay, so three methods that I've found work best for capturing wild yeast. Wild yeast starter jar, fruit and flora, and then using the sterile cotton swabs. The wild yeast starter jar is tricky. It's like a lambic fermentation. It's romantic, but it's tricky. So it's not necessarily the easiest method. So the wild yeast starter jar. You're going to boil some wort. 1040 gravity typically works. You can do slightly hopped just for a few minutes just to get some of those alpha acids in there. It's probably best to acidify the wort a bit. If you were in Mike's presentation yesterday, he talked about reducing the pH to help prevent some of the nastier bugs from trickling into your wort that you don't want. So once you've boiled those things, stick it in your collection vessel, whether it's a mason jar or whatnot. Cover it with some cheesecloth, set it outside in places that you think might be yeast rich. So the pictures here show mason jars that I had in my garden, so right next to herbs, good places underneath a fruit tree. Wherever you like, you can even put it in your brew room. Set it outside. The next day, bring it back in, cover it up, pour it into a growler with an airlock, any way that you can to prevent access to oxygen. That's going to help prevent some of the less desirable microbes from taking over your wort. And then just leave it in a warm, dark place and kind of forget about it. This isn't something you're going to rush. You're not on a timetable here. Have a fun experiment and then put it away for a while and come back to it. Not any sooner than 2 weeks. Maybe 4 weeks is better. Just give it a month or so in a warm place where it can incubate. And then you just want to watch for signs of fermentation. You don't want to experiment with anything that hasn't had some kind of bubbling activity on it. It's going to be mild. It's not going to be a vigorous fermentation. This isn't your 5-gallon batch of homebrew. The number of microbes that have gotten into this jar is pretty minor, so it's going to be a subtle fermentation. You really want to make sure that the wort is fermented to be safe. And then other things you can do is check the gravity, obviously, and then a pH meter is helpful. If the pH has dropped, that's good. If it's gone up, you don't want that. Anything with abnormal colors. I've had jars turn red. I've had jars grow mushrooms. While it was fun to look at and poke with a stick, you don't want to eat it. So you want to toss those. That's why you want to do more than one jar, more than one capture vessel at a time. You're really, not very good odds to get something yummy. So increase your odds by putting lots of capture vessels outside. And then refrigerate for a few days to flocculate anything that's in there. And then becomes the fun part, the sensory evaluation. How crazy are you? If you put it in a jar, open it up, you may have some mold growth, not the end of the world, just scrape it off. You don't have to taste the liquid in there. That's okay. I'm a little bit crazy. I probably will. But the first thing you should do is do the basic sniff test. I think that's probably the best indication if you have something that's worth working with. If it smells disgusting, toss it. If it smells like cream corn, maybe. If it smells like honey, definitely. Those are the things that I'm looking for, and it's highly subjective. You're not going to toss back this beer. Really, the end goal is to isolate something from this. So in the end, find the ones you like, toss the ones you don't, and then use a pipette or your turkey baser that's been sanitized to remove a sample. And then if you taste it, bitter, sour, it's pretty standard. In the end, if it's either of those things, it's not a big deal. Okay, second method, fruit and flora. This is the fun one, I think, because anywhere you go, you find wild berries sitting around. Those are prime for wild yeast cultivation. So pick things as you're out hiking or, you have a friend's backyard or whatnot. Don't pick up things off the ground. The bad microbes live on the ground. The good ones live in the air. pick ones that are ripe or decomposing. That's a good sign that you have some kind of wild yeast that's fermenting the fruit. They're trying to get to those simple sugars. Flour is another good option. I think after Jester King posted about doing a lot of capturing of local yeast from flours, a lot of people were trying that out. So that's fun. That's exciting. That's something I haven't done a whole lot of, but I think there is some success there. I've tried to cultivate yeast from individual flours, and some of them didn't work out, but I've found some. I think finding ones where you have a ready source of nectar, like honeysuckle, is probably a better option than just grabbing flours that you see. And then if you're traveling, just stick those in a test tube, and as soon as you get home, make sure it's refrigerated. You don't want mold to take over, because that's going to be a detriment to your yeast collection. So once you're home, get a test tube with low-gravity wort, 1010, 1020, and then pour that into your vial with the fruit. Shake it up a couple times a day. Keep on doing that for a few weeks, and you'll see fermentation fairly quickly. This is a much more dense way of capturing yeast, so it should be very visible when you have some kind of level of carbonation. Occasionally, slightly open the lid to let out CO2. And then just, you know, let it rest for a couple weeks, and then eventually you'll see a yeast sediment form at the bottom. Sterile cotton swabs. This is probably the easiest. You can take these anywhere. You don't need to worry about refrigeration. You don't have to worry about customs stealing your fruit that you've captured in Belgium. And if you see the picture on the right, you can sneakily capture yeast from a brewery that you enjoy. So rub sterile swabs on any surface that you think might have wild yeast. We show a fooder there on the right, wild fruit in the middle. That was somewhere in the Azores. So you see that coating of dusting on fruit. That's a good place to look for yeast. That's a good source. So swab that up. You'll see a darkening, maybe brownish, blackish on the sterile cotton swab. Stick that into a test tube and take it home with you. You don't need to necessarily worry about refrigerating it. That'll be good for a while, and it's not likely to grow mold. And then once you get home, treat it like you did with the berries, the small fruit. Dunk that sterile swab, the end that you've swabbed, not the part that you've put your fingers on, dunk that into a test tube with low-gravity wort, swirl it around, make sure it gets really saturated, and then pull it out, put the lid back on the swab with the wort, and then shake it up continually like the other fruits. Okay, a lot of information there. Let's have a quick interlude. Hope everyone's paying attention. I know it's early, but we're going to do a quiz, yeast and bug porn quiz. Number one, no pressure, but which of these is Britannomyces on auger? One, two, or three? Say it out loud if you know it. Okay, which is it? All of them. You're all winners. Except for that one person who said none of them. You are not a winner. Okay. So I think that just shows you, like, Britannomyces can come in several different forms, and even wild yeast. So there's not just one way to look at something and call it out as yeast or Britannomyces or bacteria. Okay. So the following steps, we went through the capturing yeast. Now what are we going to do with it? Well, you need to find a place where you can have your little workstation. You're not in a lab. You don't have a laminar flow hood. But you are a bootlegger. You have a closet. You have things that have multiple sides on them that aren't exposed to the air. So this is a picture of a cabinet that I use to do a lot of my work. So what are we calling a draft-free area? Any enclosed space with solid, non-porous surfaces, the ideal, a cabinet. There's a picture of the cabinet with the doors closed. It's just something I bought at Walmart. People use it for outdoor storage. Closets, make sure it's in a closed room without open vents. Turn off your AC, turn off your heat. You don't want air flying around, pushing the microbes into what you're working on. If the air seems stale, that's actually what you want, what you're looking for. Better than nothing, use a cardboard box. Stick it on its side. It's got a top, it's got a side, it's got a bottom. Just work inside of it. You know, it's not the perfect solution, but most people have cardboard box. Use it. And then disinfect. most people have Lysol or something close to it. Lysol is wonderful. It kills horrible things in your bathroom, and it kills horrible things in your brew closet. Don't have that, use rubbing alcohol. Just follow the instructions. Usually with Lysol, you spray it, you wipe it down, let it sit for 10 minutes or so, and you have a pretty good clean surface. Better than nothing, use Star San. Star San isn't going to be as effective as Lysol, but if that's what you got, use it. You want to make sure you're cleaning the surfaces that you're working on. Even if you don't have something visibly covered in yeast, it's better to be safe than sorry. And then a bonus, if you have an air filter with a HEPA filter, these are actually not that expensive. You can buy them at Walmart, Amazon, and they're super helpful. Okay, so have captured the yeast. What are we going to do with it? Well, we want to create an auger plate. You can see in the background, there's a bunch of them. There's a lot of ways you can make auger plates. I'm going to try to do it the most simplest way. We're just trying to be effective and as cheap as possible. So auger is essentially just seaweed that, when it's boiled with something else, it binds together, and then once it cools, it sets into a gelatin-like form. It's better than gelatin in that it doesn't melt at high room temperatures. So this is what we're going to use in all of our isolating activities. And agar isn't that expensive. You can find it actually in some international grocery stores, but definitely on online sites like Amazon. So a simple recipe, 300 milliliters of low-gravity wort, 5 grams of agar, and then just a dash of yeast nutrient. Boil those all together until they're evenly mixed. You might get some lumps, not the end of the world. And then let it cool for roughly 5 minutes. It's a tricky. You need to play around with this a little bit because agar will set super quick. So it's finding the right temperature where it's not boilingly hot, but it's not cool enough to set before you're ready to pour them into your agar plates. So once you pour them into the petri dish, you always want to do it on the bottom. And you want to set those out in a giraffe-free area like we talked about, your closet. You have to let them cool. They're going to be super hot still. They're still going to be steaming. So you need to let it cool down, stop steaming before you put the lid on. And then let it set. Once it's cooled, put the lid on, but turn it upside down. You always keep auger plates on the top part up. So what we would think would be the bottom is actually the top. You're trying to prevent condensation from falling into the auger, which can contaminate the plates. Mold is really the enemy here. It's ubiquitous, and auger plates are super susceptible to that, so you want to prevent anything from like that happening. So parafilm or your plastic wrap, cut into small strips. You want to wrap the edges for storage. Until you're ready to use the auger plates, you always want to keep them wrapped because they can dry out fairly easily. So you're trying to prevent air from coming in contact with it until you're ready to use it. And like I said, yeah, keep it upside down. All right, so you captured the yeast. You've created the agar plates. Now what you're going to do it, you're going to streak yeast. This is the fun part. Yeast wranglers streak in public. It's not a big deal. We'll have a little video because it can be a little bit hard to explain. You got all that? Okay, we can just skip this section then. All right, streaking plates. Good thing to do before you get into this. You've got your wild culture. You're ready to get in there and streak. Probably let's dial it back for a second and actually do an experimentation with a pure culture. You have an old vial sitting around that probably isn't ready to be pitched into a 5-gallon batch anymore. Experiment with that. You really want to see what it's like on a plate when it grows. Get comfortable with streaking because you can make some simple mistakes. So just try it out with that first. Okay, so when you're ready to streak, you have your agar plate. Grab it from the fridge, remove the wrap, the parafilm, unbin your inoculation loop, which is a paper clip, and then you need to do all of this underneath your heat source, your flame. So if you have your gas range, you're doing it underneath the gas range. The upward draft of the heat is creating a nice place that's free of microbes from falling into what you're working on. It's not sterile, but it's ideal for what you have. You're going to sterilize the end of the paper clip and then let it cool. Anytime you're touching the yeast, you always want to sterilize the paper clip, and the heat source is great for that. So you're ready to streak. You have your auger plate in one hand. You have your inoculation loop or paper clip in the other. You're going to dip the loop into your liquid with your wild yeast, and then you're going to make three lines in one direction. You can see this little illustration here. Three lines, one corner, go across, then go back and sterilize your paper clip. You're not going to go and then re-dunk it into your wild yeast culture. Really what you're trying to do is thin out what you've already put out there. You've put a ton of microbes out there. You can't see it, but there really are potentially even millions of microbes out there. So the goal is to thin it out as much as possible so that by the time you're done streaking, you'll have a single colony that's grown up from a single cell, and that way you know that it's pure, and then you can continue working with the pure culture. So you've done your three streaks. Sterilize your paperclip. Go back and do three more streaks on the very end of your previous streaks, and then continue that process until you've thinned that out. And if there's room, draw some lines towards the middle. And if there's any microbiologists in here, you're probably aghast in horror at the streaking technique. That's okay. We're trying to do this the most efficient way for people who are streaking for the first time. Okay, so you've streaked it, put the lid back on, make sure it's auger side up. That's how we always do it. And then you incubate in a dark area until you start seeing some growth. Depending on what you're working with, depending on how many cells you're using, it could be a couple days, it could be a week, it could be a month longer. So you just have to have some patience here. All right. So we want to isolate some yeast. We have growth. We're nearing the finish line. We're looking for something like this. Now, this is a different streaking technique, but you can still see that I started heavy on the left side, and then eventually just got thinned out on the right, and then in the bottom right corner, there's a few cells that should be pure. Those grew up from a single cell into several other cells, and you have a colony that you can use to isolate and have a pure culture. So, first thing you need to do is actually grab a new plate. Grab your old plate. You're looking for a microbe that looks something like yeast. We just looked at that photo. It's something that's maybe white, off-white, generally round. It's not gooey. It's not shiny. This is why you do a test streak with your pure culture, so you have a general idea of what a Cerevisiae strain might look like. So you have a new plate. You remove the parafilm from that. Sterilize your paper clip. Then you grab the colony that you like that looks exciting to you, and then you pick it up. And then you streak another plate. I know you thought you were close to isolating it, but you really need to streak it again. You're a bootleg brew scientist. You don't have the benefit maybe of a microscope, so you really need to keep on streaking and repeating this process until you have a uniform-looking plate that everything has a similar morphology, color, and shape, and size. Because the first time you do that, it's going to be a cornucopia of random things that you found. So it could be mold, it could be bacteria, or whatnot. So find the thing that looks like yeast, and then restreak it until you find a uniform plate that you've grown. So you've gotten to this point where you have a uniform plate. You're going to pick up a single colony again, and then you're going to dunk that into a test tube with low-gravity wort. And then you just swirl around, dunk it in there until that little colony falls off. You'll see it's thick enough that it'll actually just float into the wort. So there you go. Congrats, you have the world's smallest yeast starter. Then from there, you can go ahead and bank that. You can build it up to pitch bowl quantities, do it tenfold. Your test tube is probably about 10 milliliters. Build it up to 100 to 1,000. And then toss that into a homebrew batch you're ready to brew with. All right, can we start with the second beer? Once you get used to it, probably twice is probably at most you need to do. As long as you're using, good technique, then you'll probably be fine with just two. But there are some persnickety strains that just they'll want to get stuck together with others, and it may take a little bit longer. Okay. So you have the knowledge. Now, what do you do it? We have a shameless plug alert coming here. Bootleg Biology has developed the Backyard Yeast Wrangling Toolkit, so it has everything the experimental home brewer needs to capture, culture, and isolate yeast. You can find this online at Rebel Brewer and some of your local homebrew stores. Includes all of these things here, like the ones we mentioned that are a little bit harder to get a hold of, so it has it all in one handy mason jar. So what do you do with it? You've captured the yeast, you've isolated it, what do you want to do with it? Well, we want you to become part of Bootleg Biology. That's part of our mission, is education, teaching you these techniques with the hopes that you'll share your yeasts with the project. We offer a one-to-one exchange. You provide us a local yeast culture that you've captured. We'll send you one back. If you decide that you don't want to go through the steps of isolating the yeast, but you have captured something wild in your backyard, go ahead and send it to us. And if we isolate something from it, we'll send that back to you, so you will have a pure culture. And then we also give you recognition on our website, your name. You've captured that local yeast. You are the owner of that zip code. And we'll put a link to your blog or Instagram or Twitter discount. And then just to put it in perspective that, you know, this isn't just people who are on the periphery of homebrewing. We have had two homebrew contributors go on to start opening up their own breweries because they wanted local yeast. They wanted a strain that they could start with in their brewery and stand apart from others. And this was a first step for them. Okay, so we have one more bootleg interlude. Hope you're ready for a second quiz. This one's sexy. Get ready for this slide. All right. Which is lactobacillus under magnification? So we looked at a microbe on agar. Now we're looking at it under a microscope. One and two. Is that your final answer? And the answer is number two. You got it. Give yourself a pat on the back. I'll give you a high five later. So just to go back here, number one is actually Brett C. It does this thing. It's called pseudo hyphae. When it's budding, sometimes it actually still connects to other cells, and it looks like a multicellular organism. Two is lactobacillus. Actually isolated from kimchi that I made at home, and we'll talk about that in a second. And number three is Pediococcus, which is actually a variation of lactobacillus. And two and three are bacteria, by the way. Okay, so what are we drinking? This is what I'm calling Berliner Bear. It's my take on a Berliner Weiss. Using the additional stout grain bill. So just to give you a run through on the process, I started with a Pilsner wheat malt base, mashed that, drained the runnings into a carboy, and then I soured that with lactobacillus that was isolated from my home kimchi for 48 hours at roughly 40°C, 105 Fahrenheit. And you can see the picture there at the bottom left, that was actually photo number two in the previous quiz. And then on the right in that photo is the lactobacillus grown on an agar plate. So this is just to show you, too, that it's not just yeast that you can capture and isolate. You can actually do it with bacteria that you want to play with in your brewing. So after that was soured for 2 days with the lactobacillus, racked that into a kettle, boiled it, killed off the lactobacillus. We're trying to make a quick sour here. Dark grains were steeped for 10 minutes, and the wort was boiled for 20 minutes with a negligible amount of hops just to get the hop flavor in there. And then it was fermented out with Arlingtonesis, the same one that was in the first beer that we tried. And then the final stats, it was a 3.2 pH, so a nice lactic punch there, and then 3% ABV, so super low gravity, but I hope it still has a little bit of body there to make it enjoyable. And I'm interested to see what y'all's thoughts are, because there's some controversy on sourness and roasty grains, but I hopefully it turned out well. All right, so before we get into the QA, I have some frequently asked questions. Hopefully I'll answer some of them for you. So if you picked up a little bit, I was talking about sterilizing, and it's not used interchangeably with sanitary. Your sanitary liquid will not produce sterile conditions. It's a fine point for homebrewers, but when you're working with pure cultures, it actually is very important. So what is sterile? It's the complete absence of microbial life, and it's typically done and then made, or the only way you can verify that it's maintained is not exposing what you're working with to naked air. So when you have a test tube and you've sterilized it, the lid's still on, everything inside is sterile until you take off the lid. Once you take off the lid, it's no longer sterile. A bunch of yeast may not have jumped into it, but it doesn't matter. It's no longer sterile. Easiest way to do that in your home is with an autoclave. We talked about using a flame, a Bunsen burner, but boiling does not produce sterile conditions. Boiling is perfect for a brewer. You work in a brewery and the brewer boils wort and hands it to the lab guy, he's not actually giving you sterile wort. That's something that you need to achieve with much higher temperatures. And sanitary is an acceptable number of microbes, and as brewers, that's typically what we're working with, but it doesn't mean the absence of life. So how do you sterilize at home? Pressure cooker, I use this constantly all the time. The rule is anything that touches a pure culture has to be sterilized. And so that's test tubes, we're talking about yeast starters. I'm playing with all kinds of nasty bugs all the time. Contamination is a serious concern. So you want to make sure that it has been sterilized. So make sure you put your stir bar in your flask when you're putting it in the autoclave, so you're sterilizing that as well. So another question I get all the time, how do I know what I've isolated? Well, we do have, it's a little hard to see on that screen, but microbe portrait gallery on bootlegbiology.com, and it has pictures of the most common brewer's yeast, Brettanomyces, Lactobacillus, all those grown on auger plates. And then if you're at super yeast geek level 2 under magnification as well. So you've grown it on the auger plate. What am I working with? Which colony do I pick to isolate? Go look at the microbe portrait gallery, and you can get a general idea of what you want to look for. And then a follow-up question is, well, how do I know I have a pure culture? I'm just a homebrew. I don't have a microscope. Well, that's okay. We talked about restreak. You know, you've done your first streak. You've grabbed a colony. You streaked it again. Well, keep on doing that until you're comfortable with it. It's not the end of the world if you have to restreak a plate. You just have to spend a little bit more time. There's no way that you can 100% guarantee you have a pure culture if you're not verifying it with a microscope, but you can be pretty confident that you do have something when you are streaking it and you have a final plate that is uniform growth on it. And then, of course, sterilizing everything. If this wasn't enough information for you, there are lots of great blogs online that go even further and talk about other super geeky things. A lot of these blogs are written by microbiologists, so if you want to learn more about selective plates and such, they have other recipes. Okay. One last thing. Some things in life truly are free, so we have a special NHC tchotchke that we're offering. Anyone who likes us on social media, that's your incentive, and then comes, checks us out at the Grist booth tonight. Number 27, we'll give you your free training loop and auger plate. So this is a small petri dish filled with auger that you can streak at home with a pure culture just to do your first test. These things need to be refrigerated because we talked about mold is always a possibility with auger plates. So as soon as you get home or you get back to your room, make sure you stick it in the fridge. But come see us tonight at Club Night. We'll actually be pouring an additional beer, 100% Brett Pale Ale, that we fermented with one of our cultures. All right, and that's it.
All right, everybody, let's make sure we get your questions into the microphone so that we can get them on the audio recording.
Hi, thanks for presenting.
Thank you.
Can capturing cultures while traveling get you in trouble with the TSA?
um, I assume, possible, but I've certainly traveled in Europe and come back into the U.S. with tons of sketchy berries I've captured, and no one said anything. In fact, I think they've pulled out random things that had nothing to do with sketchy yeast instead. But if you are worried about that, sterile cotton swabs. That's why everywhere I go, I pack tons of sterile cotton swabs and test tubes so that I swab something, stick it in the tube. It looks like a Q-tip, and then you take it home with you, and you can, you know, culture it at your leisure. Thank you.
Your illustration of using the pressure cooker to sterilize, was it a small amount of water with something on top that your instruments sit on so they're just steamed under pressure, or how does that work?
Yeah, the pressure cooker I have, it came with a little metal base to keep whatever you're trying to sterilize off the bottom. I mean, people use pressure cookers to cook, but obviously they know that you're going to probably can in those too. That's primarily what people use it for. So it does keep it off the bottom because that bottom is getting extremely hot. But you're always adding a small amount of water. I think I do maybe two quarts of water to the bottom. I mean, follow the instructions with your pressure cooker on what they recommend. But really, you want enough water in there so that when it's letting off steam, it can continue to do that through the whole process, because if you run out of water, you're creating a dangerous situation with your pressure cooker.
So after you streak out your plate and you've got your myriad of colonies there, on average, how many cultures are you growing up to test off of a plate, like 5, 10, 20?
I think typically, you know, I maybe get 2 or 3 at most on a plate. I mean, there's all kinds of things growing, but as the more you do this, you realize that there may be millions of microbes in the world. You may have millions of microbes to start off with in your tube or wherever you've cultured that yeast. But as soon as you've tried to grow them and ferment them in your small amount of wort, usually 2 or 3 take over, and those are the ones you're kind of going to have to work with.
So have you tried any selective media for things like Brettanomyces over regular yeast?
I have, and I feel like they work selectively. In the end, wort is what you're going to get. It's going to capture everything you want. It's going to capture some things you don't want. But I feel like some of the selective plates that I've used have prevented things that typically should grow on a wort medium from growing. So that's telling me that you're eliminating my options. So there's some that say that, oh, it's going to prevent, you know, Saccharomyces cerevisiae from growing and only wild yeast. Well, I've done some of those, and, you know, some all of them grew and some none of them grew. So I haven't found the selective media personally that has been amazing for just growing Brettanomyces. There are media that I work with that are ideal for bacteria. Like I talked about isolating lactobacillus. I didn't do that on a typical brewer's wort medium. I used MRS, which was specifically designed for growing lactobacillus. And if you're trying to get something like bacteria, it's really a pain to grow. Bacteria is, you know, very persnickety, and it doesn't grow as well as yeast is. So that's something if you're worried about, okay, well, am I going to get bacteria or yeast? Well, yeast is usually going to jump out there first, and bacteria will probably be a slow grower because it's not the most ideal growing conditions for them.
Do you make small test batch beers that, you know, look at the characteristics of the yeast?
Oh, yeah. So this Saison that we started with is essentially what I use, you know, something that's, you know, not malt intensive, not hop intensive, and I'll create a batch, and then I'll split it into 1 gallon jugs and throw a single strain into each of them just to see how it's going to turn out. Because some of these you truly don't know. Maybe it's going to ferment clean, maybe it might be a little bit funky, and some of them, you know, you just don't enjoy drinking. So that's what I do for all of them, and I have a backlog of strains that I need to test out, but I also have a basement that's completely full of sketchy jars too.
Thank you for your presentation. Yeah. I am a microbiologist, and I think you did a great job explaining things.
Thank you.
But I do have a question. So with these swabs that you're taking back and forth, do you see kind of a drop-off in viability when they're just on cotton for days on end before you bring them home?
I can't say that I have. I mean, in the end, I know that's not a whole lot of microbes on there, but I've, you know, been busy and just set it out on a table and come back for it, you know, a month later, and I've still been able to culture something from it. You know, there's probably going to be a longer lag time on that, but I found that the microbes in the wild are very hardy. You know, they are used to growing in adverse conditions, and they, if you give them the time and the nurturing, they're going to show up for you. Occasionally, you know, some don't, but for the most part, I haven't had really any issues reculturing from the sterile swabs.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Have you thought about or tried just starting with an agar plate, just, you know, opening it up in an orchard or something like that and then going from there?
I have, and I know a lot of people try that. I talked about mold. Mold is probably the number one enemy for the bootleg brewer, and the agar plate is really just creating a playground for mold to play in. You can get yeast that way, and I've done it before, but I'm looking for the ways I'm going to get more bang for my buck, and I found the sterile cotton swabs are ideal from my experience.
Do you typically prefer disposable sterile agar plates, or do you go for glass that you can actually throw into your autoclave or pressure cooker?
I use the plastic sterilized ones, toss them out. I know it's not the most environmentally friendly way of doing it. I have a habit of breaking anything that's glass in my house. so for everyone's safety in that way, I tend to use the plastic. And it's just, to me, it's just easier and one less thing to worry about. And it's cheaper. So.
Hey, thanks for your presentation.
Thanks.
You touched briefly on banking, but I know you could probably talk for another hour about it, but could you just run through some ways you store your different strains for long term?
Yeah, totally. I knew there was going to be other people presenting, talking about some of those things, so that's why I didn't go into too much. But two of the easiest ways for anyone to do this is doing a slant. So if you have agar, you can make a slant. You just need a tube, you know, a test tube maybe. Not ideal. You need something with a wider mouth. They make larger test tubes that are easy. But essentially, you just boil your wort and agar mix and then pour it into a test tube and then leave it at an angle, and then it's going to set. If you have a pressure cooker, I'd pour it into your tube. Hopefully, it's autoclavable. Throw it in a pressure cooker, and that way you know it's 100% dead. There's nothing growing in there. And then take it out and let it cool at an angle. And then really it's just getting your pure culture and swabbing that as a lawn on that angle. So there's that. That's super great for long-term storage because it has a top to it as a seal. The agar isn't going to dry out, and you can stick that in the fridge, and you could probably have a bank for yourself for a year or two or even longer. There's other ways you can store it in solution. You can do vegetable food-grade glycerin, usually about 20% or so, and then add your culture that's been purified, and then stick it in your freezer. That's not maybe the ideal way. You know, in a lab, they've probably done a higher percentage of glycerin, and they're sticking it in deep freeze where it's like negative 80 Celsius or something. We probably don't have access to those things as home brewers, but I found that the 20% glycerin typically works, but you need to avoid a freezer that has a constant defrost cycle because you're making it a volatile situation for your culture, and it may not last much longer, but that is the ideal way to keep it almost indefinitely. So if you're not subjecting it to the harshing defrost, you could keep it for years, almost forever.
Have you seen much seasonal variability with the type of yeast that you can get and the success rate with the different seasons?
Yeah, I would say, you know, spring, summer, those are the ideal times. I mean, everything is alive, you know. Yeast grows best in warmer temperatures, so when it's warmer outside, there's probably more yeast multiplying. And, you know, I talked about fruit being an excellent source of wild yeast, so that's the ideal time is warm temperatures outside. And I guess I'm not typically culturing things in the fall or when it's cold out, so when it's enjoyable to be outside, that's when I'm yeast capturing.
I was just wondering, What kind of success rate would you expect for first-time yeast wranglers for actually obtaining a strain that would work and taste good in beer?
It's true. I mean, I've definitely, you know, had concerned email conversations with yeast wranglers, like, it didn't work. It's going to happen, but if you have some patience. I truly was lucky. I got Arlingtonesis the first time I tried to set a jar of wort out, and I think I hit the wild yeast jackpot on that. That was very lucky. I wouldn't say that's the norm, but a little bit patience, I think you'll succeed. But if you truly are looking for a higher chance of succeeding in the first time, I would probably go closer to using the fruit or the sterile cotton swabs. I think those increase your chances.
Thank you. I have a question for you on the two techniques you used first. The first one that involved the mason jar, you had a 1040 mm-hmm. original gravity. The second one for the fruit and flower and pollen, you said a 1010 to 1020. Is there a reason why there's a difference in OG?
Well, the first time it's because you're kind of creating a small batch of beer. In a way, you want the microbes to get in there, since you're more likely to get random things like bacteria and nasty fungi and whatnot in there, create a situation where fermentation can occur and create alcohol levels. But I've found when I'm doing the sterile swabs or dealing with small fruit, that isn't much of a concern, at least from my experience. So in reality, what I'm trying to do in an ideal situation is use low-gravity wort, because the higher the gravity, the more osmotic pressure you're putting on the yeast. And since, you know, it's a generally small amount of microbes, you know, it's not a safe situation for them. So you want to make it a nice and gentle environment for them to grow up and be happy.
Regarding temperature of collecting the wild yeast strains, I've read that it's more beneficial to collect them in fall and early spring when the temperatures are cooler to cut down on the acetobacter that you may get. Have you noticed anything with that?
I can't say that I have. I think in the end, if you're following these techniques, you're going to capture lots of things. But yeast is really happiest on an agar plate once you get your wild culture on there. So I can't say I've found any issues with something like that. I mean, the trade-off there is that you are getting other things that are happier in warm temperatures, like mold, too. So, you know, maybe it is better in the fall for reducing the likelihood of mold or something like that. But I can't say I've found anything specifically with acetobacter being an issue in warmer temperatures. Thank you.
All right, any other questions? All right.
Thank you all for coming and having me here. This is awesome. Come to club night.
Jeff, just one thing I would just mention. I'm an ID physician professionally, and you mentioned the molds being an issue for getting the yeast, but I would also caution you to not deal with them as potential pathogens. You could be harvesting something like blastomyces or histoplasma in this part of the country, and that would be a pathogen. In the laboratory, you put those in containment.
Sorry, I was having a little trouble hearing you, but I think you're saying, you know, being concerned about potential pathogens, and that's, you know, it's certainly a possibility, but I think with the right techniques and being aware of what you're looking for, you know, I have a microscope, and I'm looking at things, and I'm doing stains, and I'm doing... Yeah. Right.
In other words, I think molds are bad, okay?
Yeah, mold is bad. Thank you.
All right. Well, everybody, thanks to Jeff for giving us an enlightening talk. And in the meanwhile, sir, thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Drew. Appreciate it.
And ta-da.
Oh, awesome.
Get a little gift. Sweet.